Can the board and staff hear me? And if you can you give me a thumbs up, please? Excellent. Can the members of the public see and hear? If you do the same, give me a thumbs up. All right. This meeting is being recorded. Once President Brooks asked me to call the roll, indicate you are here as well as give permission to record by stating here, permission to record.
Okay, thank you, Lisa. I call the January 18, 2020 regular board meeting of Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and note the time.
It is 7 p.m. Commissioner Bourne? Commissioner Bourne, can you hear us?
You're on mute.
You're on mute, sorry. There you go.
Here, permission to record.
Great. Commissioner Covey?
Here, permission to record.
Commissioner Schneider?
Here, permission to record.
Commissioner Spain?
Here, permission to record.
President Brooks?
Here, permission to record. Excellent. On to consent agenda items. Does any commissioner want any item from the consent agenda items, A through D, are routine? No? Then I entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda items as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Bourne?
Yes.
Commissioner Covey?
Yes.
Commissioner Schneider?
Yes.
Commissioner Spain?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes. Motion passes. Okay, on to now matters from the public. It is our practice not to address questions at this time. However, we will take comments under advisement. Is there anyone who would like to make a verbal comment? If so, please limit comments to 3 minutes per person. Any comments presented in writing have been distributed to the board. Is there anyone from the public that would like to speak now? Okay.
Commissioner Brooks, I did forward the entire board 2 comments that came in. One just came in just a minute ago. So just let you know that to make sure you take a look at those, but we'll not be reading them tonight.
Okay. Okay. I understand. Thank you. We will do that. There was one that came in shortly before the meeting, and I know.
There's 2.
Okay. Okay. Got it. All righty then, moving on to approval of the Tom McDonald Commemorative Resolution number 935. Typically, I would read the resolution, but we will enter it into the record. Mr. McDonald is not here this evening, so rather than read this, I think that makes more sense. I entertain a motion to approve retirement commemoration resolution number 935 for Tom McDonald as presented.
So moved.
Bain?
Second.
Snyder?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. And this would be the discussion time. Does anyone want to make any public comments at this time?
Actually, we would, yes. Chris, okay. You want to go first?
Yeah, I just wanted to, say on the record, I mean, I know Tom wasn't able to join us tonight. What an unbelievable impact he had on the Park District in his time here, and how, you know, through his approach and all the different areas that he oversaw over the years between, you know, our former plant sale at the greenhouse and conservation efforts through the community. And really, he has a very outsized impact. And there's going to be people that are sitting under a tree in 100 years because of Tom McDonald's work in the last 15 or 20. So, he really has made a huge impact on the Park District in a way that, you know, isn't necessarily immediately visible to folks, in the sense that, you know, managing the trees and really helping us to kind of bridge over the Dutch elm issues and the emerald ash borer, and, you know, the loss of our, you know, historical oak population due to climate change. I mean, Tom has really been there from the beginning in helping the Park District to have an above average quality tree canopy. So I just wanted to note that to the board tonight. Thank you.
In addition to that, he's been a great resource for the Friends of the Green Bay Trail throughout the years, and actually assisting homeowners in a lot of their needs too. He was never, people went up to him and asked him questions. He was always polite and was willing to help them. So he definitely will be missed on our team. So we wish him a very happy retirement.
Tom was Google before there was Google when it came to plants.
True. Definitely was.
And didn't he work, didn't you lend his services to the village when there were tree issues?
We did. I mean, we frequently partnered together. I mean, Tom was a little bit more on the exotic side as far as pest control and funguses and things like that, where the village would assist us on the larger removal. So definitely a team effort there. And, you know, we're excited to kind of, you know, give some other staff some opportunities in that area going forward. But Tom is going to be absolutely missed, and his outsized presence here is going to be felt for a generation for sure.
Very, very nice comments. Does anyone have anything else to add?
I would just add something briefly. Before I was on the board, I would see him periodically in Cock Park or in Veterans Park, and had occasional conversations with him, but he was always focused on his work. He knew everything about the parks. I could tell he was just very, very informed, and they were his parks. I mean, he took care of them like they were his own. So I always had a very high regard for him.
Yes, very good. Thank you, Bart, for those kind words. Very good. So I presume he is retiring, and I certainly wish him all the best on behalf of the board, and that he has a great retirement under the trees. So thank you. Let's see here. We will then have a roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Bourne? Commissioner Colby?
Yes.
Commissioner Schneider?
Yes.
Commissioner Spain?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes, motion passes. Okay, we are going to move on to the presentation on the GJHP stipend request. I'm going to remind the board that this is simply a presentation. It is not an action item. We will not be voting on this now or ever. If in a future discussion, which will not be now, but will be at another meeting or another time, if we reach some kind of consensus about this, it would simply be on a consensus basis moved to the budget. But until then, this evening, they're going to make their presentation, I'm sure follows the packet that we had. And there'll be some time afterwards to ask questions if something was not answered during the course of this presentation. And then when we have our discussion, if there still are any additional questions, I'm sure we can submit them at that time. So I will move on now to introducing Shelley Pantelic, and I hope I pronounced that correctly, the GJHP Board President, Nancy Fidel, GJHP Board Treasurer, and Michelle Rosenthal, their Senior Program Director, who will give a presentation. Thank you. Go ahead, ladies.
Great. Well, thank you for having us here tonight. I wanted to start by saying that Nancy Fidel is actually still at work cutting meetings, so she was unable to join us. She is our treasurer, but Michelle and I should be able to address any questions that you have specific to her. So first off, thank you for having us. Thank you for your continued support of the Glencoe Junior High Project, and thank you for your consideration for a stipend. GGHP, we've been a part of Glencoe for 49 years now. Our mission is to serve Glencoe students in grades 5th through 8th. To create socially aware, civic-minded, community-oriented individuals. We have four key areas of programming, and I should say that majority of the students that we serve attend Glencoe Public Schools. However, though, there are handfuls of students who attend other schools and are Glencoe residents who are also within our community. We have four key areas of programming. Performing arts, where we typically have an annual musical and then some smaller performing arts programs throughout the year. We have social and community activities, where we actually partner with you for many of those. Skate nights, movie nights, social events, so different opportunities for the students to engage socially, as well as to engage with the community. All of our programs are open and inclusive to everyone, so nobody is left out, and we are inclusive of all. And then we have civic engagement opportunities, which is really an area that we've been trying to build and grow. And through our new senior program director, who's with us tonight, Michelle Rosenthal, she's done an excellent job of helping us grow that program. With civic engagement, we bring kids out into the community for various civic engagement events and activities such as food drives. They also have events at our location where they're participating in a civic engagement event for another organization. We have, I should say, we've gone through a lot of change in the last few years, predominantly as a result of COVID. We had to change 100% of our programming, and we really realized that there was a need for more civic engagement and more engaging programming. And since that time, we've really been working and striving to achieve that. We had some restructuring that took place, and we hired a new senior program director. And I think we laid this out in the document, so I won't get into it too much. But what I will say is we're incredibly fortunate to have Michelle on our team. She brings over 30 years of experience teaching in the Chicago Public Schools District in Highland Park. She's a member of the Highland Park community and has raised 5 children and very familiar with Glencoe, very familiar with our programs, our partners. So she has really helped bring a tremendous value to the organization and really helped us grow and expand our civic engagement. And with all of that, with the restructuring and the changes that we have implemented, our board reflected on the future of our organization and our intent. And what we realized is that obviously our operating expenses are increasing significantly as we now are employing more professional, more seasoned staff as opposed to more junior staff that we traditionally employed prior to COVID. And as a result, we're asking the Park District this year for $15,000 in the stipend instead of the traditional 10, which we had previously asked for. So I think there was a lot of detail with respect to specific programs and events to give you a flavor for what we do. So I don't want to spend a lot of time there, but I would ask if you have questions for us, or Michelle, if you have anything that you would like to add that I missed, we would love to answer and address any questions that you might have.
I would say we've been working really hard to partner up with other organizations in the community, and particularly the Park District. I've been working with Nate and just, you know, thinking ahead about some of the events and ways that we can support each other. So we've done this with skate nights. We're going to continue doing stuff like a Frisbee golf tournament, making use of the resources, like to have some sort of looking to next year, maybe have some sort of overlap in programming or run some sort of after school things in the Oasis where we maybe bring in some of the people who do run some of the Park District classes for one-time workshops. Those are some things we've been thinking about. Nate and I, we talked about running some sort of an internship summer program where we work with the nonprofits that we partner with and see if there's opportunities for students to learn more about working in the service profession. So he had talked about maybe having students help out, see what it's like in the events planning side, but there's also other sides in which possibly we'd like to have students who are interested, maybe shadow people in the field, whether it's in the parks and recreation or whether it's in city planning. And these are just some thoughts that we've had going on, but we've been working really hard to partner up with Nutria Township with events like the food bank, working with Glencoe Youth Services. Also thinking ahead too, I ended up seeing the production of Beauty and the Beast, which was wonderful this weekend, trying to figure out how we can support each other a little bit more in performing arts, or at least just bring a group of kids over to see the productions, make each other aware of what's going on with a lot of the same students. So those are just some of the thoughts of ways that we would like to work together.
Thank you. Thank you both very much. Are there any questions that you have while these representatives are here that were not answered in the packet or in this presentation? Okay. All right. If that is what I think it is, I will say thank you so much. Thanks for the detailed report you gave us and allowed us to read through this. Thank you so much for attending this evening. And you're certainly welcome to sit through the rest of the meeting, but we understand if you choose not to. So very good. Until next time, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. The board is going to take their application into consideration when directing staff to include a stipend amount. Our executive director, Lisa Shepherd, will let you know what the decision is when we make it. Thank you so much. Okay, so we have quite a lot on here. We're going to move to our discussion regarding selling park property, district property, 310 South Avenue, PIN number 0507402-0188. Excuse me, correction, 0180000. Lisa Shepherd and Chris Liner will lead that discussion.
Great. Just so a reminder, I'm going to let Chris explain all the items in here, but this will be the second time we've presented this to the board. And we're asking for a decision at the February board meeting. We did notify all the neighbors associated with Nexus property by both a signboard with a link that can get all the information on our website and letters to all the direct neighbors. We had now three emails sent on the subject, and I had forwarded them all to the board. So Chris, you want to give a little recap of this?
Yes, just to briefly recap what we previously discussed, the district was approached 2 years ago about a small abandoned alley that occupies 1,650 square feet at the south side of the park located at South and Green Bay. While the park does have an address of 310 South Avenue, the parcel does not have any South Avenue frontage. It faces Green Bay Road. As the board can see, we have the legal survey here. We had a pretty significant discussion about the fact that, you know, the board is typically not in the business of selling property. But this particular parcel effectively functions as a tax-exempt residential backyard. So you can see from the survey that the three properties adjacent to that. So again, as Lisa indicated, this will be the second time that this has been discussed in open session. And we are, you know, recommending that the board decide to move forward with this at the next meeting or choose not to based on their input. So any particular questions about the parcel or the process?
There is in your board packet, there is a sketch of the property.
We know anything about the folks that spoke today. I know one of them was a realtor that sent us a note earlier with this. Do we know if that's the realtor involved or is that just a random citizen?
No, I think that's a resident. They don't have any realtor involved that we have spoken to at all, nor do we know if there's any intention to do anything with it. So
but you know what I'm talking about? One of the comments.
Yeah, one of the public comments, I think that was a resident.
Oh, that was a resident in
making
the
a comment.
Capacity, not in the realtor capacity.
Correct.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I drove by, saw that sign several times. So, I feel like we gave the neighbors good notice. It's good to see that there was positive feedback about it. So that's unusual. So that was kind of nice to see. So I don't have any issues with moving forward with this.
Anything else from any other commissioner regarding this issue? Okay, I think the consensus that we had during the last discussion holds, and you have what you need now, right, Lisa?
Sure, I don't know if you want to open it because I see a couple new people that weren't at Matters of Public. I don't know if you want to open up for brief comments from anybody in 3 minutes.
Okay.
If there was, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not sure if the...
So the direction holds, if any, I'll do it one more time. Typically comments are at the front end of the meeting, but it's our practice not to address questions. You can make comments, but please limit them to 3 minutes. Does anyone who has jumped on after the meeting began, do you have comments now? Okay.
Great.
Okay, that is good. I'm glad I gave you a chance, and that's thank you for joining. And that's it for the discussion of that property, and we will move to the financial report. 10 months of the fiscal year is complete. John Cutero will now provide a synopsis of the report. Thank you, John.
Thank you, President Brooks. Good evening, everybody. So really have 2 months of activity here in the financial report tonight, November and December. I will focus primarily on the December financial amounts, which can be found on page 84 of 138 of your board packet. So again, just looking at the December financials, one major thing to point out here is that these are cash basis numbers, so they haven't been adjusted to accrual basis, which would be done by booking deferred revenue. That deferred revenue is typically booked at fiscal year end. And I bring that up because as we look at the REC programs here, a majority of what you see there, almost a little over $1 million in revenue for the month of December, a majority of that revenue will ultimately be booked to deferred revenue. And that revenue then is ultimately recognized in fiscal 23. Nonetheless, though, we still get a pretty clear apples-to-apples comparison on a cash basis, at least, when we look at our REC program revenue, when that's compared to, of course, the pre-pandemic levels of 12/31/19 and 12/31/18. Not a whole lot to speak to from an expense perspective as it relates to the REC programs. But as we look at the daycare department, so that continues to look very good year to date. We've now collected the entire child care restoration grant revenue, which came in early November. So again, now we'll have a more of an apples to apples comparison of the top line revenue, because we had about 170 something thousand in grant revenue in the prior year number too. You'll also notice that in the December financials for the daycare, there was actually a slight deficit, which is unusual to see. And that's due primarily to the fact that there were three pay periods in the month of December, which is obviously only happens twice a year based on our pay cycle. The daycare numbers do not reflect another grant that's been awarded to us that was awarded to us at the end of November. It's the Child Care Workforce Bonus Grant. We're still unsure as to when the timing of that grant funding will come in, kind of at the mercy of the state in terms of when that's coming in. So it could be in fiscal year 22 or ultimately after our fiscal year end at the end of February. As we take a look at the fitness department, it continues to be better than the two previous years, showing a slight profit here at the end of December. Beach and boating, not a whole lot to speak to here. Obviously, the revenue is pretty much recognized for the rest of the fiscal year. But as I mentioned in previous meetings, overall, the beach and boating department are doing much better than budgeted. And we'll look to finish up strong here with these remaining expenditures being recognized. Watts, we're obviously right in the middle of our season there. And we see that we are showing a profit here at the end of December. A big piece of that, though, is of that revenue is past revenue, which will probably dry up a bit as we get into January and February. That being said, though, Watts is still looking really good compared to what was budgeted. We're expecting a deficit of around $55,000 at the end of the fiscal year on an accrual basis, and that'll be a pretty big improvement from where we were at pre-pandemic deficit levels. Obviously, last year was an anomaly where we looked much better with the COVID considerations, too. In the DNA department, mainly salary and insurance expense for this month. Not much to speak to. There were 2 months of health insurance expenses in there, which is why it's a little higher, just a matter of the timing of the invoices there and payments. Parks department had a pretty quiet month from an expenditure standpoint, too. Salaries and G&A made up most of the $135,000 of December expenditures. Same goes for the REC admin ticket department. Again, a pretty quiet month from an expenditure perspective, mainly G&A and salaries. And again, just a reminder that we did not make the Fund 69 transfer this year yet, at least. So, you know, factoring in that $850,000 from the prior year would put that bottom line almost right about the same amount, actually, as prior year. So pretty consistent from that perspective. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you all might have.
Hey, John, I just have one. It's an administrative sort of detail. back on page 33 to 37, there's a center column and there's a lot of room there. It could be wider, but it doesn't, the titles aren't long enough for me to read all of them. So I didn't know if in the future you could widen that column that's on pages 33 to 37.
Sure, Bart. Yeah, okay. I see what you're referring to in the report summary there on the vendor list of bills. Okay. So we could certainly take a look at that and try to get those columns better aligned.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah.
I have two questions for you. One is a comment. I firmly believe that the fitness department's doing well because you got a second Peloton. There's no doubt in my mind that that's driving people there. But that was a tongue-in-cheek comment. The actual real question I have for you is about daycare. I am having a hard time understanding how daycare is, and I see we have 150,000 grants in there. But if I look at the expenses as of, you know, December of 2019, they're, you know, 150,000 less than what they are for December of 2021. And maybe this is something you could maybe know off the top of your head, or maybe you can research, but we've had an increase in population and we've had an increase in expenses due to salary retention. I know that the kitchen expenses haven't quite hit yet. It just seems to me like the costs are not going up as much as I would have thought. And I'm kind of surprised to see the profit margin on this climbing. If you take out the 150,000 grant, it's still a pretty big profit maker for us. What's going on there? Why is the margin going up on this?
Yeah, I'd probably pass it over to Bobby. I think I have an idea, but Bobby would probably be able to answer that best.
So there's one item that we made a change 2 years ago, which was employee discounts, which originally came out of there. But to be more transparent, we moved all the employee discounts under one line item. So that would have, there was quite a significant line item there that came out of it. The other thing I will note is we have been significantly short on staff for the last year and a half. So we're substituting full-time staff in there. We've consistently been below what we would like to staff at. So that is making up a large portion of those savings.
You'd call that a six-figure savings, Bobby?
There's also, we also have to consider health insurance. So if we have one employee who changes from family coverage to no coverage as we've had turnover, that can be a $30,000 swing as well.
Okay.
So there is things that skew that. We'll say it's probably a six-figure employee discount. I think it is almost a six-figure discount.
Okay. Don't get me wrong. I'm all for, I love having our employees have kids there. I think it attracts great talent. And I think it also, it keeps our teachers on their toes a little bit. So I love having the kids in there. Thank you for sharing the accounting adjustment.
And go ahead, Carol.
Follow up question on that. So it sounds like from what you're saying that this isn't the new normal for what we're expecting for the
daycare.
And I was wondering what we're planning to do with that. Is that, are we setting aside any surplus or contingencies in the future, or what happens to that?
That's a good question.
It's really important to note also that's not taking into account some of our indirect expenses. So while it looks like there's a profit, that is not necessarily the case. So there's indirect expenses such as building and insurance and things like that. Insurance comes out of there that aren't accounted for that. But then anything above that goes into our capital projects light item, or it goes into our fund balances, but then gets transferred over. So that's how we paid for the playground. That's how we pay for all the new equipment and things like that, those larger ticket items. Do you agree, Bobby and John?
What's been done historically is the indirect cost allocation has been set at a certain percentage, but then capped at a certain amount. So that is correct. While there is some being allocated, it's capped to what at a certain amount. So it's not truly capturing what that full indirect cost allocation would be.
So if I understand correctly, some of it gets transferred for other reserve purposes. Does it all go back to daycare, or does some of it go to support the broader park district? I understand that you're supporting there's probably allocations to support what you said, what's done in other funds, but.
Yeah, what's been done in the past is any surplus within the recreation fund has been transferred over to the master plan capital project fund, fund 69, and has funded, you know, things like the playground that Lisa had alluded to, but ultimately the master plan for capital projects within the district.
But also, as we know, John, IMRF, Social Security, Medicare is out of a different fund, so that doesn't Correct. Come out of Children's Circle.
Correct.
But that's also why, like last year, Carol, or maybe it was 2 years already, when we built the new playground at Takeoff, that was a very sizable expense. But because so much money from the daycare goes back in, it really was more self-funded. So the teachers had a, you know, a big say on what equipment goes there. And, it, you know, maybe something the board wouldn't have voted for if that money wasn't there. So it is, it really does still go towards the preschool. And like the new indoor gym was funded through that same fund as well.
And really all the equipment. The walking trail additional around Takeoff that's been used heavily. It's very nice for our daycare also.
You know, on a just kind of an average basis, it's probably $2 to $3 million in capital improvements that have been made to the Takeoff Center that directly impact this program in the last 5 years. So $1 million playground, $500,000 roof, $300,000 or $400,000 with the parking lots, the walking path. I mean, they're all directly correlated to the success of this program, but they're also used by the program. So,
I still, Carol, just as somebody who thinks that every product has costs allocated to it, it was a big struggle for me to come to this world where it's like, wait, why don't you just allocate, you know, part of take it overhead to daycare or the trail to daycare or the park, and it's just not how it's done. But I think our minds think alike, where it's like, wait, you know, where's coming? Because otherwise, the way to think about it is the playground is free for the daycare, and it's really not, but it's just not accounted for that way.
I mean, you look at the $400,000 worth of rooftop units that we're going to do in the last 24 months that directly benefit this area and the building. I mean, it's Children's Circle Wing, the multipurpose wing. I mean, those are directly correlated to the operation of the program.
In our world, in the private sector, the product would have there would be an overhead cost associated with it allocated to the product.
Right, and depreciation, et cetera. Okay.
Yeah. At the end of the day, if we're talking $2.2 million going into the take-up in the playgrounds and the roof and the building, the walking path, the early childhood center has not generated that much revenue to offset it. So taxpayers are still offsetting the program.
And going forward, I think it's safe to say as the picture of employee compensation in this field changes, that kind of movement of additional revenue will diminish over, you know, in the next, as we readjust to the realities of staffing.
That's absolutely correct. Correct.
I think it's this picture is short term.
Yep.
Yeah, I will say I had to ask Bobby something about a piece of gym equipment, and they said he's not in his office. He's at the daycare being a teacher for the week. So I can attest to noting that Bobby is probably wearing many hats.
Enjoying my experience. I'm learning a lot of new kids' names, and I'm enjoying the experience.
I hear you're a master at Carline.
They don't want to lose him, put it that way, when we hired the new position. So
excellent questions. And I don't always say that. Those were excellent questions. Does anyone have anything else on this matter?
Do you think Watts is going to continue? How do you allocate Watts' revenue? Is it the season passes, do you allocate them to each month, or do you just take it all when you sell them?
Yeah, it's all cash basis. So that's why we're seeing, you know, what we're seeing now is obviously a lot of that revenue comes in up front, and that'll trickle off then with the next 2 months.
COC watts probably go in the red, I imagine.
It's going to go in the red, but it's going to be a much smaller deficit than has historically been the case at pre-pandemic levels.
Got it. Well, we're still in a pandemic, so.
Okay, then we will move on now to the executive director report. Again, Lisa Shepherd will review the items in her report.
All right, so a big thank you to Bobby, who's leading, and Lauren, who's not on this call, leading the migration for RecTrack. So that has been going on all this week and is still going on, and I see Jill's here, and big thank you to the business services team, front desk team, rec team. This was a big team project make this happen. A lot of work behind the scenes. So kudos to all them. And while the migration is still going on, we hope that concludes soon. And then with that, then we're going to go into the website upgrade. Now, Erin, I don't know if I want to speak on that really quick.
Absolutely. So we're really close to having a test site for you guys to kind of play with and try it out. Not there yet, but I'm hoping in the next week or two to send you guys something to give us some feedback on. So stay tuned. It's going to happen really fast. Everything's happening. It's been building. It's all going to just come together really fast. So stay tuned.
Seems like it's a slow process, but so much work behind the scenes has to go into this. So this is one of our big projects this year.
For anyone at any company that's done a migration of this size, I can assure you, well aware of how much work goes into it, how much testing, like implementation, and then testing, and then more testing, and then more testing, and I'm excited to see it. So thank you, those who are working on it. I know it's not easy.
And this last push for testing, where you're navigating through the site and taking notes, and is really critical. So anyone who can carve out a little bit of time and participate and help out, from my own work experience, it's really invaluable. And Erin, thank you for posting that social media message that said, please excuse us, we're in the middle of this, you know, be patient. That's always a good reminder for people.
Yeah, we're going to keep posting that this week while the registration is down. We have something going up every day. We don't have a lot of registration right now. That's why we're doing it right now.
Yep.
But our next brochure will go out in mid-February, and we hope for that registration in March, that everything is smooth, the website, the registration, everything will be ready to go for that March 10th.
I'm happy I didn't have to check in at the gym today.
Yeah. Free.
Free. So you'll be this week. So kudos to them. They're doing a wonderful job. We did put in here in the report, we would like to keep the beach pass pricing same status as last year and in line with our neighbors to the south of us. So we're recommending not doing an increase of any fees this year. We did a big one last year. But we are doing an increase, 3% increase for resident boaters and 6% to non-resident boaters, trying to get it in line with our goals of what those fees should be. So we're slowly raising those every year. So those are the changes we're making for our beach passes. Does anybody want any discussion on that? It was very successful last year and was, you know, we're going to align with that. Perfect. Thank you. I'll really quickly go over this. Children's Circle, we have
I'm sorry, can I ask you a question about that? So I see that the non-resident passes are the same. We're at a really peak point with the pandemic. Is it understood that we will just allow non-residents to come and get in with a... So we'll let the beach open to non-residents if they want to buy the pass, no matter where the pandemic is?
Yes, we did that last year. And obviously, during the weekends, they have to have a season pass to get in. Okay. And we did not have problems with overcrowding at all last year. So we were able to manage it very well. We always have to let, because of the grants we've taken in the past, non-residents buy, but residents get the first option, and then we open up to non-residents. So we'll continue.
Is there a limit on total?
We did not have to limit it last year, and we still had no problem with overcrowding.
Okay.
Correct, Bobby?
that would be the same. You know, maybe Omicron is in decline, but it seems like it's much more contagious. So if it were still around, would we allow less crowding than past year, or?
We would have to watch the data. As you know, outside transmission is very low. It's more inside transmission that they're worried about. So like with everything in the pandemic, we'll keep on watching the data and make decisions closer to that time. If it turns out there is an outbreak, we'll do things just like we did for our programs, put them on pause or put mitigation things in place at that time. But as of right now, we had no overcrowding at all. Residents, when people buy passes, they tend to go down there only for a couple hours and then they leave. So even if we have a large pass number, we still haven't seen overcrowded. So they come for a couple hours, they leave. Where when people come with dailies, they tend to buy their daily and stay there all day. So we're still recommending the same thing as last year, where season passes are only allowed on weekends, whether that's resident or non-resident, and dailies during the week.
We did see in the heights of the pandemic in 2020, an average of 9 visits per pass holder, dropping down to 3 last year. So I would say that should probably continue that trend of about 3 to 5 visits per pass holder.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess the final point is like I'm thinking of another point in the agenda, which is affiliate relations with Northbrook or exchanges. And that was suspended 2 years ago, I guess, and it's related to, I'll mention it now, in light of the pandemic. And it looks like at the point that was suspended, there were maybe the peak in the spring that year was like 2,500 new cases per day in Illinois. And we're about 11 and a half times that right now. So, yeah, I want
to. That was also prior to the vaccine and things like that. So,
and I think, Barb, there's two things that are different now between when the pandemic first came out. One of which is there's a vaccine. Two of which is that it wasn't until after last summer that we learned that I think transmission outside is fairly limited. And so even Illinois doesn't have mask rules outside. The kids at recess go outside without masks. And I think that sort of got me over the hump. The other thing to think about is if you really want to, you know, we don't know what the future holds, but I think all signs are pointing to at least this round coming to an end in the next few weeks, or at least, you know, coming down significantly. But I don't know how comfortable I feel about presupposing what the summer is going to look like. Thinking the summer is going to be any more or less different than sort of last summer.
Right. Yeah. Hey. I guess, and my point, and then I'll let it go, is the numbers are really high right now, and we've had what, 4 different variants, and I take a lot of comfort from the point that outside it doesn't seem to transmit much at all. It's much more, you know, much more inside. But it just, we're at a real peak, and it seems this might not be the time to make decisions or loosen it. But I hear your side as well. It's still a serious issue, and we're at a peak point in the pandemic. So I just want to make sure that we're not being too loose in, you know, letting people onto the beach. But again, I hear you, and I appreciate your experience before, where pass holders were coming a lot less, so you didn't get the crowding.
Or staying for shorter times. And passes go on sale, March, when the brochure comes out. We always see, last year we saw an increase in December also, right after vacations and things like that. And then it settled down afterwards. So we'll just keep an eye on it like we do for everything and watch what the recommendations are.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
So go ahead, Lisa.
Okay, so we're still experiencing shortage in children's circle teachers. As Bobby already mentioned, we're putting full-time staff when needed into those programs. We do have contingency plans should we fall below required amounts, and we would activate those if we need it. We're still trying every avenue to hire teachers and just like you see in other industries, we are equally having that hard time. So we're doing all that we can, but just want to make you aware of that. As Bobby and Chris alluded to, Watt Center is doing very well. Everybody's having a great experience. The weather has been very conducive to a successful outdoor ice season, not a lot of snow. The staff is doing a marvelous job out there. We had a very successful event yesterday, Watts Below Zero. So successful. This is what our fifth year of doing this one. And we added more amenities and we had a lot of lines. We had a lot of people attend that event, which is a good thing. Just like as we grow any event, we'll look at what we can do next year as far as what we can do about lines and things like that to make the experience a little less, I guess, frustrating for people. Even though most people weren't, they understand that, you know, when you have an event of this size. We also think this is one of the few avenues of outside entertainment, which people wanted to do because of the pandemic. But kudos to Bobby and Nate and the whole team for all the creative activities they had that really brought people out. And Aaron's very good marketing of this event. We were getting tons of calls that day. So the weather was just all the stars aligned on that. But again, we'll keep on looking at how we can spread that out or space out the people in the future as we continue to grow that event. So,
you know, Lisa, I did look at all the social media postings about it, and I sent my children to Children's Circle that day, but it really made me wish I had pulled them out. It looked amazing. Those bumper cars on the ice and the horse-drawn carriage, that's so special and magic. Like, I've just never seen that at an event, you know, in one of these communities before. So I really hope you do it next year because we'll participate.
Oh, yeah, we will definitely do it again next year. Yeah.
Those pictures were great. Can't wait to go.
Good. We love that feedback.
I went and I loved it. And I actually love that my kid went and I didn't have to watch him that much.
Oh, that's nice.
I was there with the girls and you already addressed my comments. You know, a few too many non-residents, actually a lot of non-residents, because it's a free event and people hear about it. And so I know I talked to staff there as well about addressing that next year. You know, is it just for pass holders? Is it pass holders and residents can get a, you know, a card or a wristband or something to alleviate. And of course, everyone wants to do the two special things. So that's why lines became an issue. And you can't go inside because of the pandemic, so it's harder to maneuver. So that could be different next year.
We have to be careful about not excluding non-residents because we did accept a $2 million park grant for this. So we have to allow non-residents to go. So if we charge nothing for residents, we can only charge nothing for non-residents. If we charge $2 for residents, then it could be $4. So we'll look at ways of and I don't know if I necessarily want to just do it for pass holders for this big event that's always been like a community event, but we're going to look at ways we can spread it out and make it, you know, maybe sign up for time slots. Like if we have a 10, 11, 12, and the families come at those times, maybe we'll work, make the lines go down a little bit better or a little less. So, but you're right. It was the really big ones like the bumpers and the horseback riding that was extremely popular. So.
Did we market it widely outside of the community?
Erin?
Social media blasts, but we also have a lot of pass holders now in our database that aren't just residents.
Yeah.
Right. So if they share it with their friends and, or, you know, like there's not a lot of park districts have a winter carnival like this or a festival. Not as cool as attractions, I have to say, but they have them on the weekends. And so we do ours on a school day off on Monday. And I think that brings a lot of people in because there's not a lot to do on that day for a school off. So it makes it more special. So, but we'll look at those items as we go forward.
I think the pictures sold it.
The pictures sold it without a doubt. It was incredible. So I know, and I for replaceable parking, it was a beautiful walk. It was a beautiful day. I walked over a mile. I had it on my wrist. I knew how long I walked. So but you had to walk through the pretty park mostly in neighborhoods, so it wasn't a bad thing. So, okay. I'm not going to go over that, but I'm just going to highlight Pardon me?
Just a quick question, and I know my dog is barking. Apologies. I get that we can't sell tickets to the event. And Stephanie, I didn't even think about that. So great idea. Can we sell tickets to parts of it? Like, could we have sold tickets to the bumper cars and sold tickets to the horseback, the horse carriage, and let like the skating be free? Is that something we're allowed to do?
Yeah, and that's the things we're going to look at. Things like that. We are going to look at that. And if, you know, maybe putting a little surcharge on some of the activities that are extremely expensive and extremely popular, because one of our issues is if we extend the day to have it made from 2 hours to 4 hours, it becomes very expensive. So that might be an option to extend it by doing a small fee, not trying to gouge anybody, but, you know, so that's something we're looking at too.
Gallagher would offer those bumper cars right now, Michael, at $15 for 2 minutes.
What'd you say?
The Gallagher Way next to Wrigley Field offers ice bumper cars for $15 for 2 minutes.
Man.
Yeah, that's gouging people, that's for sure.
Oh, wow.
That's really gouging, but I definitely think next time we need to have a commissioners versus board bumper car session.
I want to do it for our staff.
Yeah, I like that, Michael.
So remember the holiday appreciation party next year. Do that one. That'd be fun. I just want you to note the appendix, especially the green team is in here. They've been doing a lot of work, and I just want to take note to their efforts. And I know, I believe Matt's on the call, and he's our team leader for the green team initiatives. So they've been, you know, working through and looking at ways that we can be more sustainable, more green, and work towards different solutions. So if you take the time to look that over, and if you have any questions for future, please let us know. But, you know, we've done things like the No Idle program in conjunction with the whole village. We had a great Earth Day cleanup day this year. The honeybee habitat, we've had that for 3 years, but we added a big educational proponent to it, which is just great for our both children's circles, ELCs, and our camps. They have to learn a lot about bees and how important they are to our ecosystem. And they're evaluating electric charging stations, green new lighting, little things that make a big impact, but maybe people don't notice. So kudos to Matt and the whole green team, which is, they're all volunteers on our staff that serve on those committees. So we appreciate that. I would also like to note in Appendix C, we highlighted the accomplishments for the year, and it happens to be about 5 pages long this year. So kudos to the entire team in working towards our goal, even in the midst of a pandemic. So, you know, things I wanted to emphasize just really quick is that how amazing our team is at pivoting and hitting a moving target continually this year with the ever-changing COVID. It's not as easy as you think, and always being ready to change. And usually on a Friday night at 3 when they come out, and then having have it ready by Monday. It's ever changing, and the staff from everybody in our organization is prepared to move and pivot and pick up the slack or change the cleaning methods, everything. So that itself is, if they got that done this year, it's amazing. But in addition to that, we had record attendance at Glencoe Beach and Watts Ice Center. Obviously, our community is looking to be outside more with the pandemic, and they have rediscovered our great assets that we have. And then there's still a very high demand for Children's Circle. We are still the go-to provider for full-day preschool. And with this community changing over and more young families coming in, we don't see an end to that either. And that's a big, we know that's in part, that's totally because of our great administration down there with Jessica, and then our teachers who are just wonderful and dedicated, especially now they're stepping up and they are working more hours than I care to think. So they're doing an amazing job down there. We also continue to advocate with our state and local lawmakers. And I think Chris has a little button on his phone right to the DNR office. To talk to them weekly and to keep on advocating and keeping us front and center. And I continue to talk to our local legislators about grants, and they've really paid off. You know, we have a total of over $4 million in grants that we've received this year. So that's on top of everything else. So I'm not going to read every single one of them, but, you know, things that really, if you look at, and I have pictures on the back of my wall, Duke, and that Connect Lanco Trail that we finished, you know, sometimes I think, oh my God, that's been there forever. And it's not, and it's become such an asset. Our first ADA accessible water play feature in Duke Park, the trains, which no one has, and our continue to be our great programs. And so as we move forward, we're continuing to apply for OSLAG grants and just continue to repair our infrastructure and continue to be more efficient and effective throughout the district. So again, not going to read it over, but please take the time to look at everything our team has done. They are an amazing group of people to work with, group of professionals. Everybody is, and I couldn't be more proud of what we've all accomplished together. So kudos to all them. So I always like to say that at the beginning of the year and as we go to set new goals for next year. So any questions on that? Okay. I think that's all I have then for that.
All right, Lisa, thank you. We will move on to action items. I entertain a motion to approve W.B. Olson as the construction manager for 3.25% of the total construction costs with a 0.85% for project liability insurance as presented.
So moved.
Second, please.
Carol?
Yep. Carol. Any discussion? Okay, roll call vote, please.
Mr. Bourne?
Yes.
Mr. Colby?
Yes.
Mr. Schneider?
Yes.
Commissioner Spain?
Yes.
Commissioner Brooks?
Yes. Motion passes. I entertain a motion to approve the lowest responsible bidder, Martin Construction of Elgin, Illinois, for base bid contract items 1 through 8 and 10 through 12, not to include railing replacement contract item 9, for a total award of $352,240 as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion?
That's not the total I remember, but I mean, I know we discussed it, but so that's for that's for the railing and the.
You weren't at the last meeting. So the railing came in way too high, way over budget. And we're thinking because of pandemic prices. So we eliminated the railing from consideration right now. So this is for the pier.
Okay.
So Stephanie, we'd originally earmarked $35,000 for the railing and it came in at about $275,000. When we had that conversation, we were kind of saying, okay, you know, we're willing to go 50, we're willing to go 60 for the operational efficiency of not having to paint. But I mean, to spend an entire playground on the railings was just, we felt like it was too much. So we recommended to the board, you know, the railings we have are structurally sound. We're going to have the contractor paint them. And it is possible that we could come back in the future and replace these railings at a later date without, you know, impacting our concrete surface.
Okay. And then did you guys discuss at the last meeting, like did we get any insurance payments on this yet? I know we were expecting maybe something.
We did. We received, I believe, 55% up front. I think it's $62,900, something like that. And then once the project is completed, we're scheduled to receive another 50 some thousand, like 52,000, something like that.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. So it's about a quarter.
Is there anything else? Okay, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Bourne?
Yes.
Commissioner Covey?
Yep.
Commissioner Schneider?
Yes.
Commissioner Spain?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes, motion passes. Moving on to the next item, typically in committee, I get a sense of the consensus of opinion on a matter, and then it ends up on the agenda. And what I have learned is in a situation where nobody moves the motion, we don't have to act on this agenda item, should it be, and I'm not suggesting it is, should it be a situation where we don't have enough backing? So a motion would be typically moved by somebody who's in favor of it, and then typically second to, although there's only five of us, so that's not really necessarily the way it always will be. But I'll just lay that out, that I did not get a firm feeling of how the group felt after our last discussion. I'm sure people have digested it a little bit since then and may be ready to go. So that gets us to item C. I entertain a motion to approve the 2022 Aquatic Services Reciprocal Agreement between Northbrook and Glencoe Park Districts as presented.
So moved.
I'll second it.
All right. Is there further discussion since our last discussion on this matter?
I wasn't at the board meeting, so I just want to say that I support this for various reasons, but one, because our residents also benefit from the pool, and I don't think that, you know, we didn't have overcrowding at the beach last year, so I'm not concerned about that. I think it's good to maintain this relationship.
You know, I thought it was interesting. Someone had brought up at the prior meeting that realtors use this as a way to attract residents to Glencoe because we don't have a pool. And I actually brought this up with some people, and they said that that was a factor when they moved to Glencoe, knowing that, oh, I could have access to Northbrook Pool at residence rates.
Well, interestingly, although I am not in strong favor of this, I was the one who brought that up because truly there is a real interesting pros cons column for me to look at. You know, it can go either way. I'm not strongly for it or strongly against it. I do think there is a significant equity issue with a community the size of Northbrook versus the size of Glencoe that's played out in the number of people that take advantage of the Northbrook opportunity versus the beach opportunity. I will also say that based on our surveys following our beach season, what we got heard loud and clear from Glencoe residents, who we of course serve them, is that they really liked the strong presence of residents at the beach and the fact that it was not as crowded as it has been in the past. So I think all of those factors certainly are in the con column. What I would hope is that we would consider perhaps requesting of Northbrook that they consider additionally, since there is this equity issue, something else, such as perhaps resident rates at the dog park. Or no, that's not going to happen. Okay, well, it would be, I'm just trying to think of something. I mean, Michael came up with something last time, if I'm not mistaken, a suggestion, trying to balance this out a little bit. It would be nice. I also don't know that we know what Northbrook's resident and non-resident rates are yet. They haven't published those. I looked for them myself. Bobby, I know you alluded to that last time. It would feel a little better for me. On the other hand, overall, I'm not strongly against it. It does serve a segment of our community, certainly. And as I said, I think to Michael last time, we're going to have another year of data to look at. And then when we revisit this next year, we can look at the data and see how it plays out in dollars. So that's what I have to say. Michael, do you have anything to add?
I think it's going to be really hard to ever get something equitable with a town that's 5 to 6 times the size of Glencoe or 4 to 5 times the size of Glencoe. So you're always going to see an inequity. I mentioned last time, and I'll briefly say it for Stephanie's benefit here. I think this is more incremental revenue than it is a dilution cost. I think more people sign up for it from Northbrook because of low costs rather than people who are going to sign up anyway and we're losing that revenue. You know, $50,000 or $60,000 is not a small sum, and you can do a lot with that money. So I agree with Stephanie that we didn't see overcrowding issues. I think in all the pandemic challenges that we've had and all the pandemic changes we've had with rules, I haven't seen any change from anyone about sort of the outside transmission rates. And so the beach is outside, there's enough space, this is incremental revenue. Unless the staff sees any reason to say no, I'm on Stephanie. I agree with Stephanie. I agree with Carol as well. I'd like to have access to a pool without having to invest in the infrastructure of a pool. So I think it makes sense. I think it makes sense to do it for this upcoming summer.
Art, would you like to add anything after your previous comments?
I understand that COVID transmissions are relatively low outside. I understand the benefits of access to the pool in Northbrook. I'm still just uncomfortable giving access, even though in the past there's been a low level. The optics to me just aren't good at the COVID levels being more than 11 times what they were when we first suspended this. So, I still personally, and I hear everybody else's perspective, but I'm not comfortable with it.
Okay, if there is nothing more on this, if anyone...
I guess I just want to add one more comment in that I think it would be interesting to see what it's like this year and then in the future. I think since 2019, there's added competition for pools like Lifetime opening up, you know, which is between Glencoe and Northbrook. And I think if we see a decreasing use of Glencoe residents of the Northbrook pool over time, it is something that we should reconsider.
And I'm sure Erin will do this, as she always does. But we have so many new residents, so advertising this, if this goes through, you know, advertising it to our new residents so that they're aware of it would help as well.
Lisa, can I confirm that the arrangement, the reciprocal arrangement, will be exactly as it was two years ago, so that, you know, the same access to lessons and everything, it's going to be the same. There's going to be no change on their side.
Correct. There's been no change. We're not changing anything except for obviously the amount, the fees. So same access.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with Carol that this has to be looked at again next time. And this year is a good data point for us. So, very good. So, roll call vote, please.
Sure. Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Covey?
Yes.
Commissioner Schneider?
No.
Commissioner Spain?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes. Motion passes. Okay. Is there any other business, Lisa?
Not at this time.
Okay. So I entertain a motion to go into executive session. That means that our visitors and staff will step out.
Jenny, can you go ahead and put everybody in the waiting room? And if people want to stay, when we come out of the executive session, we will re-enter you into the meeting at that time. We do not know how long it will take, and there is no action items being considered after we come out of the executive session.
That's right. After executive session, we will close out the meeting. So thank you, staff.
All right. So who's included? John needs to be included for just a little bit, and then he'll excuse himself.
Yes. Otherwise, just the board.
Okay, so you need the motion the board will now enter, and then I'll switch the thing.
Yes. Thank you, Jenny. Yes, the board will now enter into closed session there where no action will be taken. I entertain a motion that pursuant to Section 5, ILCS 120/2 of the Open Meetings Act, the board will enter closed session to discuss personnel merit increases as mandated by Section 2.06, 5 ILCS 120/2C1. Those present during executive session will include all commissioners, Lisa Shepherd and
John.
John Kutera.
Yep.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, any discussion? Okay. Note the time, please, Lisa, and do a roll call vote.
10. Commissioner Bourne?
Yes.
Commissioner Colby?
Yes.
Commissioner Schneider?
Yes.
Commissioner Spain?
Yes.
President Brooks? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Jenny. Can you let me know if anybody's still in the waiting room before you leave so I can get them out of the waiting room? Because I believe I can do that. And then that's all I need from you. Thank you.
I could begin recording again.
Okay. You started the recorder?
I did.
Okay, and I entertain a motion to return to open session.
Okay, it's at 8:42. In motion?
So moved.
Who's that?
Any discussion?
I'm sorry, I didn't get who motioned, who seconded.
Oh, I motioned.
Okay.
Second.
Okay.
Bart second.
Okay. All right, Commissioner Bourne?
Yeah.
Commissioner Covey?
Yes.
Commissioner Schneider?
Yes.
Commissioner Spain?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes, motion passes. And Lisa, you did note the time.
I did. It's 8:42 now. It took us a couple minutes. 8:43. All right, so we're back in regular session of the January 18th meeting at 8:43, and we do have a note of other business to discuss, and that would be a recommendation for percentage increases for our annual evaluations. So I'm trying to see. I sent you all.
So you're still sharing your screen in case you didn't want to.
Thank you. I'm going to stop sharing that. There we go. I sent a memo to everybody, and sorry for the delay on that one. After talking to President Brooks, we decided we could do it today. Based on our timing, we weren't sure if it would be a long agenda or not. So let's see. Do you have that handy, John? Can you share that document?
Yes, I can.
Okay, let me make sure you can share. Okay, good. All right. Sorry to put you on the spot there. I can grab it. All right. Okay. One second. Okay, so it's that time of year, and for the new commissioners, we talk about what percentage increases we'd like to recommend for the staff. So it's been our best practice to consider this before. We kind of try to carve out different sections of our budget so that on budget day of approval or discussion, it's not really long. So we continue to believe that we have an incredible staff, and we really value our full-time and actually and also our part-time staff, but we're talking about full-time personnel with this discussion, and that this deserves special consideration from our board. So John, I'm going to turn it over to you and talk a little bit about this memo, if you don't mind.
Yeah, thank you, Lisa. So the memo provides a history of salary increases, the most recent one being the 2.3% in the prior year. Of course, that was done in the midst of COVID uncertainty. And just want to make sure everybody can see my screen, see the memo on the screen.
Yes, we can.
Okay, perfect. So similar to previous years, we did survey our neighboring districts, which is up here on this page, and that was done to just better gauge what they're doing, and more importantly, really have a better idea of what we're competing with and attracting and retaining top talent. So as we can see here, of the 10 districts we surveyed, two were still to be determined, but the remaining eight had ranges of anywhere from 3 to 5%, with a median of approximately 3.75%. We also did reach out to the school district and the village and library. The school district had a range of 3.5 to 4%, whereas the village and library, the library is a component unit of the village, they were at 3%. Of course, that's for their non-union staff.
for that is only those folks. The CTI for which our property taxes are going to be based off of, it's essentially a year behind, meaning our calendar year 22 property tax receipts are based off of CPI at 12/31/20, which is 1.4%. But you know, there's no secret that that number has increased dramatically over the past year. And late last week, it was reported that CPI was measured at 7% at 12/31/21. As a reminder, CPI is a gauge in measuring inflation, and that number is now at a 39-year high. So for those reasons, we're recommending a 5% increase in full-time wages. We feel this figure is meaningful enough to help employees defray the cost of living increases that again are at a 39-year high, all while still being affordable within the framework of the fiscal 23 budget, which we'll be presenting next month to the board.
Obviously, the staff has done an amazing job. This is a performance base, so it's not automatic cost of living increase. They have to, it's based on their performance and meeting their goals. In addition to this, I just wanted to let you know what we have done over the last year is that the board did approve the salary survey and benchmarks. So based on that, we went through all of our positions through this year, adjusted salaries that were below the minimum salary requirements, and then adjusted some that were, if they were just at the minimum, but they've been here 5-10 years, those were adjusted. And they happened to be a lot of daycare staff and park staff, and a few of our like program supervisors or coordinators were also adjusted at that time. So we took that salary survey to make sure that we're comparable to what this private group said our staff should be paid. So those were also made this year. So we leave this up for consideration. Like I said, we have a historic labor shortage. We want to keep our high quality staff, and they're at a premium. So by showing our faith in them, we believe 5% is definitely warranted. You have to remember that we have a lot of staff, majority of our staff that are in the lower, don't make a ton of money, and a 7% cost of living increase is really impactful for their daily living. So I'm going to throw it out to the board for any consideration or questions. Oh, and this was put in our first draft budget. We know we can afford a 5% raise. Correct.
So this is a pool 5%, so you can allocate different amounts to different people. It's not everyone gets a 5.
That is correct. It's merit-based. So some may get 6, some may make it 4.
Can you scroll back up to that first page? I just want to point out that many of those are 0% last year. They didn't give any increases, the second page.
Correct.
They gave 0%. We gave 3% last year. So that's a huge difference. So while Wilmette may be giving 5% this year, they gave 0 last year. Same with the Village of Blanco.
We did 2.3, Stephanie, and just a quick correction.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry, it's 3, the year before.
You're
so
correct.
I want to point that out.
Yep.
There. I also want to say that, you know, throwing, while I realize difficulties we have with staffing, you know, we kept everyone on throughout the pandemic, and unfortunately people still left. So while, you know, you can't throw money at that's not going to fix all our issues. While I see that we can afford it, I just want to point that out, that there's only one district, Wilmette, that's proposing that 5%, or Lake Bluff. But Wilmette, you can't really count because they gave 0 last year. So,
I would also like to note that that's just one thing. We don't know what their salary range is. So we don't know if they're at the higher end of the salary range. So I don't know if you can always take into account because they may not have, you know, a daycare like we do or things like that. So we don't know what their salary ranges are. So while that's one thing we should look at, it's not the only thing.
But we did adjust our salaries for sure.
So yeah, but we don't know if we adjusted them. So not everybody was adjusted.
But we did have a good amount of increase this year.
We
have to keep factoring in all this. You know, this raise will be $105,000, but then we also just factored in a bunch of raises and adjustments, and so it's, you know, it starts to add up.
How does this affect our pension liability? So
do we lose Michael Colby? Oh, there he is. Sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't see you on the thing. I'm sorry. I apologize. Okay, Carol, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to know, understand how this affects IMRF. So,
John, do you want to answer that?
If we raise wages, does that increase our pension liability because our out year pension obligations will be higher? I mean, I'm very understanding of the, I'm just kind of trying to understand in general. This isn't a critique of your increase request, just sure. How that factors in.
Yeah, no, that's a good question, Carol. So it essentially we'll be paying employer contributions, you know, on our employees' wages, which for our 2022 calendar year, that's 10.44%.
Mm-hmm.
Is the employer wage side of things, and then that rate is established so that our liability is fully funded in the future. And I'd have to check our funded ratio, but it's near 100% in our most recent audit.
So that rate needs adjust, yeah. So we keep funding. Okay.
Correct. We would pay, you know, our employer contribution share on that of 10.44% on all IMRF eligible employees. That standard is 1,000 hours per year.
And then when you did your projections for affordability of this, that included, I'm assuming, the IMRF component.
That is correct, yes. It's all incorporated into here.
Yeah, I think this is, you know, I think it's a balancing act, Lisa. And I think you mentioned something that resonates with me earlier when you were talking about, you know, Glenville may be small in size, but man, we are, I think this is a pretty demanding population for the services, the parks, the facilities that we have. And with that comes probably a little extra expense in labor. Do you have attrition rates by any chance for the park? So just to kind of put this in perspective, with the Stephanie's point, are we attriting more people than these other districts? Are we less? Are we kind of on par? If we're on par, that's kind of a good thing of saying that, you know, money won't solve everything, but it certainly helps to count some of the efficiency if you have an efficient problem for everyone else.
Well, it's hard to really compare apples to oranges because we're the only daycare in the North Shore. So 60% of our 60 of our employees are daycare, right? So
yeah.
The attrition there is not the best. You know, it's been because they're going back to school or the burnout factor, or right now there's a, you know, child care storage, so people are leaving, or just the safety of it. So it's hard to compare that. I would say that I often feel like I'm the training ground for other park districts, and they staff up our staff and are able to,
yeah,
based on their salary. So, which leads me to believe we're still under what a lot of them are. I mean, our early childhood supervisor was snapped up by Glenview, and you know, so it happens. So by having a good wage, then keeps them here.
I imagine that next year we'll see a rate increase somewhere on some of our facilities and some of our things. And Carol,
I was in your shoes paying for Program Circle and ELC. I paid for both Program Circle and ELC. So I was in your shoes and I understand that. But if PPI is going up by 7%, I expect our costs to go up. I expect to pay pass throughs in other arenas. That doesn't seem unreasonable. In fact, my hunch is that WorldNet realized that it made a grave mistake, probably, and lost money before.
That's an assumption.
It's a total assumption.
You're also forgetting that maybe they didn't give raises because they weren't open. So we turned around and opened within 12 weeks. So you have to remember that. Were they not open like we were?
Yeah. But 5% in a world where CPI doesn't seem unreasonable. And again, I think a lot of folks are people that, you know, when they see grocery bills going up 7%, and their salary is only going up, you know, 2 or 3%, that gives them all the reason to leave to a place like WorldNet that's been paying more. Or you see, you know, Lake Bluff paid 3, 3, 3, 5, you know, Glenview paid 3, 3, 3, 5. So I think that I'm comfortable with it as long as I can afford it. I guess my question is, you know, actually, on a question that I'm pondering, and I'm having time to think about this, is, you know, can we afford to not do this? That is, I don't want to see bodies out there in children's circles as a teacher. I want to see teachers teaching, no offense to the bodies. I don't want to see Chris doing car wash or, you know, Aaron or someone else doing something they're not supposed to do, because they have skills and I want to use those skills. So if this helps, and it looks like I think it will, I'm not instantaneously, doesn't say anything heartburn, but I do want to make it better.
I'm always a meanie on this one. Because that's fine. I'm not stingy, but, you know, the schools are giving 3.5 to 4. Last year they had 3. You give 5, and then what do you do next year? Then you look like, oh, well, now I only get 2. I don't think this is going to solve our staffing problem. I really don't, but I think it's a little much coming off. Okay, we're coming back, but we still lost a lot of money during the pandemic. So even though we got a ton of grants, you know, we still lost a lot of programming money. So just as a taxpayer, how do we justify that, like, we're way above the schools? The teachers have been through a lot. There's a total shortage of teachers and subs there as well. They have a ton of money that came in from the government. So I just have a hard time justifying when we just gave a lot of increases and really looked at our salaries to be fair. If we did a good job and were fair, which I think we were, then we shouldn't need 5%. I think matching the school, which is still above the village, is where I'm more comfortable.
Just to put it out there, the average teacher's salary is $86,000. In 2019, versus I presume our average is much lower. And I also think that the teachers, you know, they work their tails off too. There is no doubt. A lot of them work, you know, 8 to 9 months a year. And so I think it's a little bit of a different ballgame. And people can supplement their salaries in the summer by doing other activities. So
the teachers are the only ones in the district, though. There's a lot of lower paid, you know, salaries and positions in the district as well.
I think that from what I've researched, the vast majority of the salaries at the in D35 is teachers and principals and things like that. But anyway,
are the schools on a multi-year contract, so they don't negotiate year to year either?
As well, right?
So that might be preset.
Yeah.
I would say, to your point, you know, I know I talked about daycare costs, have one less for the next budget year. So I think daycare, you could easily pass on 5%. Because parents are desperate, and I'm not saying to jack it up extremely, but I think that's very reasonable. So I think we could offset a portion of the 5% through children's circle fees. So this isn't entirely coming from the levy.
Well, the children's circle can't, right? Children's circle can't be supported by the levy that's going on. I mean, it just doesn't. I hear what you're saying, Stephanie, and I agree with you that, you know, we've had to get ourselves up to market. But I think that you're seeing that the market is moving towards that CPI number. Glenview, Lake Bluff, Wilmette, you know, and Glencoe's a little bit unique. I think the Baker thing is a real deal. But anyway, I'm talking up. So this does not give me heartburn, but I would like to think about it and understand and just, you know, it doesn't give me heartburn. I'll say that.
Yeah, so I have a question for Lisa Shepherd. Am I on mute here? Lisa, can you hear me?
Yep. Yes, I was on mute. Sorry. Go ahead, Bart.
Okay. Yeah, so I was thinking along Michael's lines, although I agree with what he said, although I was looking at it a little bit differently, which is you've got a lot of continuity with high-quality staff, and they, at this point, a lot of them are already doing part of or all of jobs of people below them who have left. So they're under a lot of stress. If we lose more people at a lower level, do you see more risk of mid-level or higher level turnover where someone comes to them and said, hey, we'll pay you what you're making more now or a little bit more, but you get to do your job? And you know, so some people might say, hey, that's what I want. I want to do my job. I don't want to do the clerical stuff or whatever. I mean, are we at risk if we lose some people at the bottom level? You've got high quality staff who's been under a lot of stress for coming up in 2 years. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
That's definitely a possibility. I mean, I don't think we'll lose them to other park districts as far as that level, because going to the other park districts, the same thing's happening across the board.
Okay.
We're all like, but would we lose them to a private sector? Yes.
Okay.
So,
right,
I mean, I've seen people leave the park district in general because they're like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. So, losing different levels of staff does put hardship on across the board on all the management staff, because they are doing two or three jobs, you know. None of us is doing just one job. It's way more than that this year and the last couple of years. So, yes, there is a direct correlation. If you don't take care of everybody, then you have a chance to lose everybody. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Welcome.
You know, I will add just one thought, and I hate to keep focusing on the daycares and preschool staff, although it's certainly a big chunk of our employees, but you know, it's very, very difficult to make any sort of a reasonable comparison between our school district teachers and the teachers we have, because they're very different. You know, our teachers work all year round, et cetera, et cetera. But I will say that our teachers in Glencoe they are paid at a much higher than average rate for the state of Illinois, for instance. So, if you look at the premium for those teachers in a community like Glencoe, one might think that the teachers in the preschool and daycare should work at a similar premium to the average. So that's how I like to look at it. There is that, and I do think that there is a real and threatening burnout among employees in specific fields, and it's just the beginning. And education is one, childcare is one, nursing is one. It's coming, and it's. I don't know how to stop it, and I don't know that money will fix it, but it certainly will help. And things can. So anyway, that's just my feeling. So I'm not as horrified by the ask as I might have been in another year, a different year. So 5% doesn't seem all as awful as it would have 2 years ago.
I would say my employer gave everyone a 5% raise in the fall because of inflation across the board. So I don't know. It seems like the private sector is in this direction too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and my company certainly is not. Thank you, CARES Act. But I do think that, you know, the 5%, as I said, I think to summarize this book that you were saying was, it doesn't give you heartburn, like it doesn't give me heartburn, like it would in a wrong year.
Yep.
You know, there are organizations that are doing drastically different things in order to for retention. So while Carol's firm may be getting 5%, my wife's firm is getting 2 extra paid holidays, and or unpaid, sorry, paid personal days. Personal days, you don't have to roll over like they used to. So that, you know, I think there's things to think about like that as well if you think retention is an issue. But you know, it doesn't give me heartburn, and it's sort of, I think this is a good way of retaining people. But the 7% is just, it's a drastic number for people. What is the average daycare?
Gosh, they're under, like, they're probably, do you know, John, off the top of your head?
Full-time?
Okay, give me full-time.
So would be like around 45.
Like if you make 45 grand and your groceries are anything like a normal American, you know, my groceries are expensive. I spend, $500 a month on groceries, but most people buy $600 a month on groceries. You're talking like 25% of the dollar goes to groceries.
Right.
And when those go up, it's a big deal. And I think this is a retention opportunity. I think people will be for the Amazons of the world or, terrible physicians and companies, every company hiring. So to me, as I ponder, it gives me less and less heartburn. Although, Stephanie, you are absolutely correct. We're doling out a lot of cash. My hunch is that with the grants that we've received, this is kind of the intent of it. I don't want to sound like a Reagan economist, but is this what trickle down is? Are they giving grants to the park district who therefore can get better salaries to the employees who therefore can buy groceries and other services and pay their food?
I still stick with what I'm saying. The school has just as big of an issue with retention, you know, and they don't feel the need to do the 5%, and we just did all those salary adjustments. So I don't think it's
going to
fix the issue of the preschool teachers, unfortunately.
Stephanie, what data do you have to support the retention is similar in our daycare and in park district versus the educators at C35?
Well, it's not the retention, it's just they're having the same staffing issues. I mean, they've got the same issue where they have a fear of not opening because of staffing for, it could be sickness, illness or other issues. But
yeah, I thought their issue was because of COVID illness, not because of staffing shortages like the park district. So I'm trying to figure out the comparison.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know exactly, their specific issues, but I just think if you look at the general view of what's on the screen, I'd still say 4% is fair.
I've got a question for Lisa or John. What percent of the staff have we lost in the last 2 years since the pandemic started?
The attrition rate, that's what I was asking Mark earlier.
I don't know. I couldn't give that to you right now. We could dig it out. Are you talking all full and part-time? I mean...
Yeah, kind of, I guess everywhere, because that affects the...
It does, yeah. I don't know.
Okay, so let's do this. It's definitely higher, right? It's definitely higher than you would normally.
Yes, without a doubt. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm on board with this. I mean, there's so much stress that has been going on with the people in the park district, and it's a really high quality group of people. I don't know how you replace them if you lose them. Now they're not going to be the same caliber. As it may not work completely, but I think people like working at the park district, and it's like they're saying the park district likes me. They're trying to keep me here, and with the high quality people, it generates more loyalty. But it's hard. You can argue either side, but the 5% is certainly below the 7% inflation right now. So it saves you having to come back and look at this sooner. I know we don't like to look at it more than annually, but I'm on board.
Okay, Stephanie, I do think you had some really salient comments. I very much appreciated what you contributed to this, because it's a good point that I'm sure is shared by others in the community. But again, I'm sticking with my thinking that that we need to have the same sort of above average premium for teaching positions at our school and daycare at our school as the school district does, to comply with the standards of the community. So that's how I'm looking at this. And I think we have something of a consensus that we can move with. I'll just go down real quick. Stephanie, you stated clearly you're okay with 4, and that's your limit. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And Art, you just said you're fine with 5?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And Michael, you said you're fine with 5?
Yeah, I'm okay with 5.
Okay. And Carol?
Yeah. I mean, I get Stephanie's point. I think that, you know, in this, you have to think about the long-term consequences of what a 5% raise is. But I think that some analysis has been done that we can afford it, and I think we need to.
Yeah, I will agree with that. I think we need to. And again, we look at this again with different eyes next year when we see how you know, how this impacted things and how things have developed. So I will say yes. So Lisa, you do have consensus on 5, and we can move with that.
All right. Thank you very much for the thoughtful consideration. Appreciate it.
Okay.
That's all the business I had. Other business, I should say.
Okay. That's it. And I have no further business. And if that is, does anybody else have anything else they need to add or discuss? Okay. So, I entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Covey?
Yes.
Commissioner Snyder?
Yes.
Commissioner Spain?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes, motion passes. Meeting adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you all.
Lisa, you're going to get those evaluations out tomorrow, please.
Yep. I'll give all that information to you tomorrow morning.
And please, last.